So hi, it's very nice to be here. Thank you again, organizers, that I have opportunity to be here and to just talk about very simple models. So it will be more from the point of view, I think, solid state physics than the topology, at least in this short talk. Okay. So, well, at first I would like to just say again a couple of phrases of introduction concerning topological insulators, and then I would like to answer the question what happens when not only the surface contribution to the 3D topological insulator is important, but also the bulk contribution. So, as in just brief introduction, so that's what you already saw many hundred times, yeah? So what happens in the topological insulators, and the minimal model which we can use is just the simple model when you have velocity and sigma is a spin, t is a momentum, and we have a different chirality, meaning different orientation of the spin, precession of the spin in for the upper and the lower surface states. And this is the minimal model one can make just for the topological insulator. And in a case of some kind of time reversal breaking perturbation, as it's here, for example, magnetic field of ferromagnet, then what happens is if I add up this to this Hamiltonian, I can open the gap. So that's exactly the gap, which will be of the order of 2 delta in the surface state of my topological insulator. And what I will obtain then is what already Joel Moore was talking yesterday extensively, is the quantized Hall conductivity, which actually scales as n plus 1/2 e square over h. And the question is which of the approaches is good, because from the solid state point of view, I can always calculate the Kubo formula and I can calculate the sigma xy, meaning I can calculate the Hall conductivity. So that's one approach, which actually, St. MacDonald is talking about, and it has its limitations. So this is approach just from the simple transport point of view, and obviously there is approach which John Moore explained yesterday very deeply, which is an approach looking from the quantum field theory and looking at this magnetoelectric coupling, which is this coupling between the electric and the magnetic field, which is connected with this theta function. So why do I mention these two approaches, and why didn't I just go directly to the topology? Because I think there's advantages of both of these approaches. So in a case of a topological situation, the advantage is simple, because in simple language, I can get immediately from the Lagrangian the answer which I want. But what is here, I think, disadvantage is that there is not simple way to put the bulk conductivity into the problem with the theta, because it's only showing what happens really at the interface, and I have to have adiabatic change between the bulk of my material and the outside, for example, vacuum. And so that's one disadvantage. Well, here, I think the disadvantage is that if you use Kubo formula, you have a problem with the cutoff. So if you calculate the sigma xy, you need to actually put the cutoff, meaning the difference between the Dirac point and the bands to the infinity. So it has also disadvantages. So you can, to get the quantized value of the sigma xy. So both of them have advantages and disadvantages. And so that's what I wanted just to emphasize. And maybe another thing which will be useful just for this talk is what happens now when I have a topological insulator and I have two ferromagnets. So now, depending on the orientation of these two ferromagnets, I can calculate just a Chern number. Actually, here this would be the first Chern number, because I'm talking about the quantum Hall effect from the surface state. And depending on the orientation of these two ferromagnets, I can have a zero Hall conductance or the conductance which will scale. So meaning I will add up the Hall conductance from the upper and the lower surface. So this would give me a quantized value which would be of the order e square over h, when n is really an odd number, meaning it's e square over h, e square over h, and so on, depending obviously on the densities of the surface states. Okay, so what is then the motivation of my talk? So the question is if I have the materials which are the reality materials, meaning like the bismuthium telluride, bismuthium selenite. And if I look at the sigma xy as a function of the magnetic field, what I see, what I would like to see, is this nice topological response, which gives me the steps, actually odd steps, in the magnetic field for the whole conductance. But what one can observe is just some bulbs here. Yeah? So it's very difficult to say if this is how much it is quantized, because the bulk conductivity of the material is quite large. So here, since I'm from Würzburg, I should immediately emphasize our material, meaning the material which is produced in Würzburg, which is strained mercury telluride. I will mention it in a moment in the second part of the talk. When you actually can see some, I will talk about it more, when you see actually the steps in the sigma xy. So I would like then focus on two different approaches to find the surface contribution in transport. So one of them will be just to look, and this is what I will present first, if there is any anomalous transport when bulk is important. So that's, is there any contribution from the surface states you can still extract? Is there any signature? So that will be the first question I will want to ask. And the second question is, so if I cannot do this, meaning if, so that's one idea. And second idea is, well, if what happens if I can actually have materials when I have a negligible bulk conductivity? So I will just do these two approaches to the problem. Okay, so I will start with the approach from matrix. Yeah? So as it's what Agent Smith said, that if you cannot beat us, just join us. So if you cannot fight with the bulk conductance, just see what happens when you have it in a problem. Yeah? Okay, so what we did then, so that's exactly, this is very simple calculation. Okay, so we take the whole conductance of my surface states of the order of E squared over H. Okay, and then we ask the question, as I said already, if now my surface conductance in relation to the sigma, which I call the bulk conductance, and for the dimensional purposes I have to have here D, which is the width of my thin film, is much smaller than 1, then what happens? Can I still see something? Yeah, so what we did, we actually, together with my postdoc, we put the, let's assume the setup like this, that I have a ferromagnetic impurities or magnetic field. For us, it's not so important, but let's assume ferromagnetic impurities, because some of the assumption will go easier, on the top of and on the bottom of the topological insulator, and then see what happens. So what we did, so we actually what we assumed is that the frequency, as well as the cyclotron frequency, is much smaller than the gap. So that means that we really gonna put the, so meaning that the frequency and the cyclotron frequency cannot take us out of the gap of the surface state. Plus, we also assumed that the width of our film is much smaller than the skin penetration length. And what we did more or less is solving the Maxwell equations within film-film approach, meaning when the width of my thin film is much smaller than the C over omega. And we actually, we solve it for the full situation, matching the boundary condition of the reflected light and so on. But then we notice that if I assume that the this is quite large, delta is of the 10 millielectronvolts, then my D is of the order of 20 micrometer, which is a large value for the thin film. So anyway, it seems like thin film approximation works quite well. So then what we did, we just write the Maxwell equation and write the source currents. Okay? So the source currents are the currents which are coming obviously here, and they are connected with the surface contribution as well as with the bulk contribution. So as a surface contribution, we just took, as you can see here, so this is this whole conductance of the surface, which is decaying as a delta. So it's really, so this obviously helps when you do some integrals, and that means that we assume that the surface really do not penetrate far away into the bulk, which seemed to be a case. And then for the bulk current, we assume that it's connected with the longitudinal and whole part of the bulk conductivity, which again can be easily calculated from the Kubo formula, meaning it is obviously if I want the sigma L and I want just simple semi-classical approach, then I can find immediately that longitudinal conductivity is connected with the frequency and with the cyclotron frequency connected with the magnetic field. And also what I can then immediately see is that external magnetic field and AC frequency can suppress bulk conductivity. And this is one of the arguments which we can then use to actually be able to suppress the bulk conductivity when we look at the both, at the surface and the bulk part. Okay, so if I only probe the bulk, then I would have a Mermin result. Yeah, so it would be extremely simple, meaning that if I have Lorentz forces compensated by the Hall effect, and what I will obtain is that my magnetoresistance will be independent of the magnetic field and will just scale like 1 over sigma. And this obviously also gives me ordinary Hall effect, meaning that I will obtain just something which scales like a minus omega tau. So this is when I do not have any of the surface states. So now if I put the surface states, what will happen? Well, what will happen actually will be maybe not so surprising, but was surprising at the first class. Yeah. So what happens is that my, in the simplest picture which I'm presenting right now, is that the Lorentz force will not be completely compensated by the Hall effect. And actually, a current will not be exactly in the x direction, but will be renormalized by this contribution from the surface states. Yeah, so the, oops. So what will happen is that the Hall coefficient, so I have now not only this usual Hall effect from the bulk, but I have additional coefficient which is connected with the surface state and which scales like a surface contribution to the bulk, okay, to the bulk contribution, and this gives a renormalization of the Hall coefficient by an amount which is connected with the ratio of these two, yeah, as well as with the cyclotron frequency.
So could you remind me what is sigma?
Sigma is bulk conductivity.
Oh.
So it's a bulk conductivity without renormalization. So the sigma L was longitudinal conductivity, which was renormalized then by the magnetic field and frequency. But here we actually have a zero frequency limit as a first point. So what I'm saying is that it's just like an additional, I would say that this is additional Hall effect from the surface states, which actually add up to the normal Hall coefficient, and actually pushes this current not in x direction, but changing its direction, and add up additional contributions also to the magnetoresistance, which, as you will see in a moment, are quite particular, okay? So if I now look at this formula, and expanded for the sigma h over this sigma, meaning for a small, so this should be in general in this bismuthium telluride selenite materials a small coefficient, yeah? Because this whole conductivity over the bulk conductivity. So if I now just look at this formula for a small ratio, then what I will see, so this is now magnetoresistance as a function, so this is right x as a function of the magnetic field, and here is again the ratio of the bulk conductivity to the surface conductivity. And I did it for the sigma h over d. It's so much smaller, so this is for a large coefficient. Yeah? So I did only now this expansion. This plot is with the full formula. This expansion is for the small sigma h over d sigma. And you can see that what happens is that you will obtain negative magnetoresistance. Moreover, because the surface Hall conductivity is related to the sign of magnetic field. And omega obviously is also, because it's a cyclotron frequency, is also connected with the magnetic field. Then what you obtain here is kind of absolute value of the magnetic field dependence. That's why you are obtaining here such a cusp behavior, which is very, I would say, unusual to be in the transport experiment. So that's why we think that this could be some kind of unusual linear negative magnetoresistance, which possibly could be observed in the experiments.
So if no x axis is the total list, is figuring out that's the arm?
No, the rho x here is the total magnetoresistance, which is from the surface and from the bulk contribution here.
So you say that the path is very unusual. What? I mean, I thought it looks.
Come again? No, it's not an localization effect. I mean, yes, if you had, you could have some kind of anti-local, but it would be hopefully in a different limit, yeah? So it would be in the strong disorder, in a very strong disorder limit.
So this is just in the level of diffusive.
Yes.
Transfer,
yeah, it's in the, only in the, yes, because the bulk conductivity is taken in a diffusive way, yes.
I think anti-localization will also give you a quadratic behavior at small b.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would give you quadratic, and in general, that's a very good point. That since, well, due to that relation, simple symmetry relation, you know that all of this has to be in general even in b. Yeah, whatever correction you will get here, but the yeah, I think anti-localization would be b square. Yeah.
Here, if b is zero, that means this capital omega is zero.
Well, rho xx, okay.
So that means, but if b is zero, you should also have the contribution from the surface space for the release.
No, for the b equals zero, in a normal situation, okay, for a b equals zero, I'm not sure what. I do not have a contribution from the surface state, at least in the way we are defining it. So b equals zero is not very well defined here, yeah? Because we started with the assumption that we'll have the quantum Hall effect from the surface state.
Okay.
Yeah, so even... okay, and this is actually the picture for the Hall coefficient, again as a function of the b and as a function of this bulk conductivity to the Hall surface Hall coefficient. And you can see again that the, now what was in a formula and what happens is that you had additional renormalization, so you didn't get the linear dependence as a function of magnetic D, as a function of the magnetic field, but you got actually something which had additional cubic corrections. I mean, quadratic corrections. So again, if you get the whole angle which is non-linear, it could indicate something, meaning it could indicate the existence of surface states. And since recently there is actually a paper by Xiao Liang and his student, when they are trying...
Postdoc,
yeah. And his postdoc, when they are trying to do the connection to topological approach, when they have doped topological insulator, and again, the conclusions are different, and that's why I would like to chat a little bit with them to understand. So if you want to, I don't want to now go obviously into the details of this approach. Well, moreover, if you now have the frequency, which is a non-zero frequency, and you look at the real part of rho xx now for a non-zero frequency, you can look at the cyclotron resonance, okay, and from this picture as well. And then you will see that you will not get, so what you will see is that your resonance is now shifted again, interestingly, by this ratio of the bulk to the surface contribution, and tau is really the tau of the bulk, and omega is again the normal cyclotron frequency. So in this picture, that's why you can get whole lines, actually whole line of the contribution to the real part of rho xx, meaning you can get the cyclotron resonance, which would not occur in one given frequency, but on the whole lines for different omegas and b's. Okay, so we can also look at the Faraday angle. Okay, and that was, again, some of the stuff was done by Alan's group, but what we are again interested in is what we can get when we have a bulk and surface contribution. So just briefly to remind it, so in the Faraday angle, what you look is really on the change in the angle of your electric field after passing through the topological insulator thin film. Okay, and in general, the Faraday angle is quite small because it's connected with the fine structure coefficient and with the electric constants of your top and bottom layers, which have this different dielectric constants, epsilon t and epsilon b. Okay, so in general it's small, but the question is now what happens when you again add up the bulk contribution, and what happens is that this depends now on the two limits. If omega tau, meaning if the cyclotron frequency multiplied by the scattering time is smaller than 1, or if omega tau is larger than 1. And then you can look at the theta as a function of b, okay? And you can see that depending now on this ratio, you can... So what happens here is that I can see that this Faraday angle will scale with the magnetic field, and actually for the large magnetic field, because of the suppression, so because of, in some sense, it is in our model already, yeah, because the bulk conductivity, we said, is suppressed in the magnetic field, at least in the semi-classical picture. So, and when we do not use the quantization of the bulk, okay, then in the situation of large magnetic field or large frequencies, okay, the signal, the Faraday angle, goes to the value which is only connected with the surface state.
So but the bulk, the reason why the transport is suppressed is the bulk from another level.
Again?
So the bulk contribution is suppressed because the conductivity of the bulk becomes small?
Yes. Yes, because if you calculate the single bubble for the conductivity in a magnetic field, you will just see that immediately in the strong magnetic field or for strong frequency, you can have a suppression. Yes.
But that's because, I mean, due to the same reason that we'll have an enhancement of the Hall conductivity in the bulk, right?
I will have an enhancement of?
I mean, the longitudinal conductivity is decreasing, but the sigma xy of the bulk should be increasing.
Well, I think actually both of them are decreasing, you know, from what I remember. Maybe just look at the formula. So you see, there is a strong omega tau, yeah, so this one is decreasing as well. Yeah, as well as the longitudinal is decreasing as well. Yeah, so that's... So when we just look at the different models, and what is interesting is again that in the omega tau regime, which is much smaller than 1, the theta can scale again as the ratio of the surface contribution to the bulk contribution. Okay, so I don't know how much time I have, but if I have a little bit of time, then I just wanted to go to the second approach, meaning to the going to the materials, which is not like bismuthium telluride or bismuthium selenide, but the materials which has a negligible bulk conductivity, like 3D strained mercury telluride. So this is a very quick overview. Okay. So if I do not have a strain and I have 3D bulk mercury telluride, then it has it is really semi-metal. Okay, and I obviously have a zero gap, at least from the point of view of gamma 8 band. Okay. But if I apply strain, then I open this gap between the light hole and heavy hole. And then what happens is that I can make this material topological insulator. And the simplest way just to make a strain in this material is just to put it on the layer of the substrate, like, for example, carbon telluride. And that was, again, this idea that strained mercury telluride can be a topological insulator was shown by Xiao Liang and Shu Cheng, and then again, and by Kane as well. So it's a known story, but obviously what is interesting is experiment. That experiment indeed shows that something is going on. So what is shown here is the ARPET experiment, which shows really the surface state. So that's one way. And the second experiment, which is obviously transport experiment, shows sigma xy as a function of B, which is well quantized. Okay? And again, what you need to see possibly, and possibly you saw already and have a question in mind, is that you don't only see even, at least in the large magnetic fields, you see also, you don't only see odd plateaus, you also see even plateaus in large magnetic fields. While in the low magnetic fields, you can really see that they are rather going like odd ones, meaning that they are going as a 5 and 7 and possibly 9. Especially if we did the, if you did the second derivative or first derivative of sigma xy in respect to b, this would be more pronounced. Well, so you can ask then why even plateaus? And as you can imagine, we have some story about it. But I would say that it can be at least more than one explanation, okay? So it depends really what's going on, and we obviously tried to make some explanation of it. So one explanation is from just non-interacting picture, thinking about that these two different Dirac cones have two different surfaces, now have different carrier density, and because different carrier density, they have different filling factors, and obviously 1/2 plus 3/2 give me 2, so I could have, in general, I could have a filling factor 2. So that could be one possible explanation, and because another question is also, what is removing the degeneracy of the surface states, meaning what kind of mechanism? And here what we believe is just broken inversion symmetry, because obviously the sample is on the substrate of the cadmium polaride, but from the upper side it's see the vacuum. Okay? So that's what we exactly did. So we just look at the non-interacting situation. On this is actually RxX is a function of the magnetic field, and we tried to look and more or less simulate the Shubnikov Dehaas oscillations. And then we said, okay, we believe that we can more or less do this within a two Dirac cones, two Dirac surfaces model. Okay. But the story is actually not full, and I'm sure that Lawrence will talk about it more, because what they have currently, it's freely gated strength mercury ferrite samples, when you can actually see the evolution. Okay, so this is RxY is a function of gate voltage, so they can tune now, say from the bulk through the surface states to the P regime as a function of magnetic field. So you can see contributions which are more related to the bulk and contributions which are more related to the surface states when you actually are in the close to the surface states of the Fermi energy.
When you say 3D, it's complex, like 60 nanometers.
Mm?
The thickness still.
So this is 70 nanometer thickness, so it's still a thin film, but it's.
So it expands the gate voltage to 10.
Yes, so they can actually, yes. And what we did together with Chao Ching and Alina is actually to do the self consistent Hartree-Fock calculation to be able to understand what's going on in the sample. And then you can actually see, so this is now done for the one of the voltages when you mainly see surface states, so when you are really in the gap, okay? And you can see that the density of states of the surface states for this situation is very large, while the bulk density is extremely, extremely small. But if you go...
So that's the local density of states
versus
the perpendicular direction?
Yes, in the perpendicular direction.
And I have two Dirac cones at different energy?
Yes.
No, is that Dirac cone?
So this is Z direction.
But this energy, so is the peak corresponds to the Dirac cone?
Yes. So the peak here corresponds to the Dirac cone, and this is the negligible bulk conductivity. So this is, okay, so what we believe currently is that if you want to describe the system correctly, you cannot just take the two Dirac surface states approximation. What you need to take into account is full K.P calculation, when you also have a Hartree-Fock potential and so on, taking into account so consistently. Because if you put gate voltage, which is large, then obviously there is a redistribution of densities and so on. So this is actually done exactly in a case, and you can, in a case of when your Fermi energy is in a gap, so you see exactly two in the dispersion, two surfaces. Okay? This is almost negligible, so this band is almost negligible. But if you make it to the situation when the gate voltage is large, then you can see many different subbands, which are not necessarily the surface states coming into account. So it's really a competition between the surface states and the bulk states.
Can you
you have two direct points because you have the speaking?
Yeah, very good question. Okay, I have two direct points. I mean, what I mean by this is the surface takes from the top, say, and the surface takes from the bottom. And they usually, you're right, they usually are degenerate. But because of the lack of inversion symmetry, because I have a different substrate for the cadmium telluride from the one side and for the vacuum, they are not the same. And that's why you see two of them. Make sense? So in general, it's one direct cone material. It's one half of the graphene, really. But because of this bulk inversion symmetry situation, it's getting more complicated. Well, so let me just then finish, because my time is for sure over. So what we looked is at the two different ways to cope, or two different ways to find this magnetoelectric effect. So one was to just look at the bulk and the surface contributions. And we found some new not trivial dependencies in the transport, like linear magnetoresistance and quadratic contribution to the Hall effect. And the second one was that actually one way is to go to the bismuthium telluride selenide, but another way is just to look at the strained mercury telluride and see what happens in this material, and try, because it actually has a very negligible bulk conductance. Thank you very much for your attention.
So this 3D, this is, if you have strain, so this is still strong topological. This is strong.
Strong topological, yes. Okay. It's a strong 3D topological insulator.
A little bit dark.
Oh, and you see, this is what I didn't do yet. So yeah, and here acknowledgments to all my collaborators. So let's keep it on.
So can I go back to the Dandrieu statement?
Oh, okay.
Why is there a feeding involved?
Well, because in general it should be almost negligible, yeah. So you know, but it can be something coming from this pump. It's almost, as you see, in the comparison with anything else, it's almost negligible. But
it's a parabolic band, so I should just get, it's a two-dimensional parabolic band, I should get a constant Dandrieu state.
Yeah, but that's, you mean here, but I think this is almost constant.
No, constant in energy, yeah. So if there is.
Okay, I see, I see that there is some, I'm not sure if this is completely parabolic, yeah? I'm not
so
sure
it's
about it.
Flatter.
Yeah, flatter than parabolic, yeah.
So yeah, that's the strain-induced gap you're talking about at k equals zero there?
What?
Roughly the strain-induced gap you're estimating?
Yes, exactly. So the strain, very good question, so the strain induced the gap around 13 electron volts in this material.
That's the one there?
So it's really the one around 20, 30 electron volts. So it's here the gap, really.
Is it possible to extract from the experimental data in the next slide to compare with this? From the position of the parallel transition, how it is consistent or non-consistent?
Yes. So what we obviously, I'm sure that Lawrence shows, she will show more, and it's all unpublished. So from the what you can get from the Fourier transformation of the Shubnikov de Haas, you know really what are the density of your peaks. Yeah, and then you can compare. So we know the total density in the K.P calculation when we divided it between the two different or three different superbands. And this all agrees with the experimental data. So it's self-consistent.